Hello, this is Guillermo del Toro, and you're listening to Out Now Podcast. Hello.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Hello, Aaron. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I can't keep up the shtick.
We went over that.
Hey, the count is just trying to be nice, okay?
The count's forgetting what he asks.
Apologies. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm excited for the topic at hand.
Good. Well, that's exactly what we're getting into in a few seconds here. Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. However, it's October, which means we have our special bonus horror-themed episodes throughout the month. And oh, boy. Do we have some fun ideas to go through throughout the month? We just released our One Hit Wonders episode, which was super fun to record. And now we have our latest entry here, Misleading Horror Promotion. I'm going to get into what exactly that means in a bit. But before that, let's introduce our guest for the evening. We have from the Brandon Peters Show, he's one killer tomato. It's Brandon Peters.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here. As always, I love these horror specials.
Also joining us from the Forgotten Film Cast, arriving out of nowhere via a fog cloud, it's Todd Liebenow.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. My experience is already stellar because I got to hear Abe's count impersonation. It brought back memories for me when my kids were little. Anytime there was counting or math involved or anything, we always had to go, after we said the number of things, because we love all things Muppets and Sesame Street in this household. So,
oh, really?
You know what's funny? I always loved the count on Sesame Street, obviously, but like we went and took my son when he was real little in like preschool to Sesame Street Live. And I was really saddened to see the count had been relegated to backup dancer.
Oh, that's a crime.
I was like, what?
How
what
dare they?
I was like, oh, sadness.
Maybe he's living out his dream.
The greatest end credits, in movie history for me is for Sesame Street Presents Follow That Bird, where the count shows up to read the end credits and count the credits, you know. Mm-hmm. One assistant director.
Really helps out. It's very charming.
That's very fun.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about Muppets. Although maybe it'll come up. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I am glad to have you both here. Abe and I are very excited to continue this horror special thing going. And we got a pretty cool topic in mind tonight. So as I mentioned, we're going through misleading horror promotion. And by that, I mean, when Abe and I were young, just small, tiny children, irresponsibly walking through video stores. We've talked about this on the podcast many times. We'd see VHS covers that would have certain kinds of imagery, scary imagery or evocative imagery, that would stick with us. Were we to have seen these movies, we'd reveal what was actually going on in said film that might have been different from said cover, but the covers stuck with us regardless. Mm-hmm. I feel like it'd be fun to talk about horror films that gave us a certain impression based on said covers or other posters in general or ads, any number of things that might have set up a certain kind of expectation. But then by the time we actually saw the movie, went a completely different direction. That's the general premise for this horror special. And so we've all assembled a number of films that in some way reference this idea. And that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to spend the rest of the time doing. So with all that said, Todd, I'll start with you. What's your first pick here?
Oh, okay. The first one I have is Evil Dead 2 for a couple of reasons.
On my list too, Todd.
Not as good as that poster. I agree. Right?
Well, I mean, the poster is the small part of things because, the poster has nothing to do with the movie. There is no, side glancing skeleton in the movie at all. But I just have a memory of back at the time the movie came out, and back then I was not into horror movies at all. I was terrified of them. I wouldn't have been watching Evil Dead 2 or Evil Dead 1 for that matter when this came out.
And the Muppets had just taken Manhattan. So, I mean,
right. You know, exactly. you know, with Evil Dead 2, the trailer and such, you know, I always just, they lean into the more grotesque, the horror aspect of the film, which is totally valid because I mean, that's, you know, a big part of the movie, but it wasn't until many years later. And I think when the movie started to get more attention and be elevated as a cult film and that you started to realize, oh, well, this is just as much a comedy as it is a horror movie. And that just was never really something that I caught on to. I mean, maybe even before, you know, started hearing discussions about it in High Fidelity, you know? So yeah, I guess I had always had the impression as a teenager that Evil Dead 2 was a straight horror film, and it is many things more than that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Brandon, let's go to you. What's your first pick?
All right. I will put a note out for people that another genre notorious for this, especially in the VHS era, is the sword and sandal or sword and sorcerer.
Oh, yes.
A lot of those don't live up to that. I just want to, for those people wanting to extend their joy of this topic after this thing. So I'm going to start with one interesting one. It fascinated me. Scream.
Really?
I had it on my list too.
So mid-release, they put out a second poster, and this is the poster that became the floating heads for floating heads' sake poster. Skeet Ulrich has a goatee on it.
He didn't
have facial hair in the movie.
And this made a big impression on you.
It did.
I like it.
Yeah. I was like, it was weird because it's simply that. It's like, did you guys not watch the movie? What is it from Touch? Is this like an extra like photograph from that? Like, where are we getting this photo of Skeet? Or is this like from the cast after party? What are we doing here? So fun story too. My senior year in high school, I was in Hello Dolly, and I was a senior
as
Barnaby Tucker.
Okay.
They put for the seniors, they'd put these like profile photos and everything, like big photos as you walked in. So I decided I had a goatee for mine because I wanted to pay tribute to Skeet Ulrich because I had to be younger than the Cornelius guy. I looked visibly older than the guy playing Cornelius Hackle, but to make myself look as young as I could, I had to shave. So I grew it out intentionally just to shave it when the show started. So my picture outside would have me with facial hair. But when you saw me in there, not facial hair, just like Skeet Ulrich and Scream. But yeah, that one always fascinated me. I mean, like, dude, like, could anyone, I guess, but it's just funny, such a little mistake or maybe not a mistake. I don't know. But yeah,
it's not a mistake. It's certainly a product of, I think, Weinstein's trying to maximize something they see as far as how can we drive up to this thing along with just laziness of not taking more headshots, like because they do it in a lot of their posters. Like Chris Rock from Dogma is the Chris Rock on the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back poster.
Right,
like, it's like they know what they have with certain stars. They know, like, this person on this poster means whatever. Like, they have whatever their logic was back in the day that they very much wanted to rely on. But Scream obviously kicked up. And we've talked about this. We had our wonderful horror movie posters episode.
Right.
Where we certainly talked about the 90s dimension era. Yeah. And I'm not sure if any of you guys have any of the other films on your list concerning these films. But, I mean, you have Scream and Phantoms and I Know What You Did Last Summer and any number of all these other
faculty.
Ones. The faculty is a big one. I mean, they're all doing the same thing. Right. And I imagine if you're a hip young star at the time, you've probably taken tons of headshots for Miramax.
Right.
And it's like if you're one of the ones that they deem marketable, they're going to put you on that poster. It's like, go to the library, get the one we got here. Get Ulrich on here. Does it matter that he has a goatee? No. Brandon, you just watched Pulp Fiction. Sam Jackson in the marketing does not have a Jerry curl in any of those posters.
True.
Short hair. They had their way of doing things. For sure.
They did.
Todd, were you going to say
something? I thought you were going to say something totally different.
Oh, okay.
Scream, yeah. Because with and you know, I don't want to steal a turn here, but
no,
you
know, what
I had
it.
Down for Scream was the Drew Barrymore factor, because there are a number of posters, and one of them is just like a large face, big eyes with a hand over the mouth type of thing. And I don't know that it's really Drew Barrymore, but I think you're supposed to think that's Drew Barrymore. And the trailer certainly focuses on Drew Barrymore quite a bit. There is a version of the poster. I think it's what they used for the VHS box, where it's got those smaller figures of various cast members. And Drew Barrymore is still the biggest one on there size wise. I mean, Neve Campbell's like half the size of Drew Barrymore on that poster image. So, you know, they, and this is a case where I think the misdirection was good, because, you know, it's good that they make you think Drew Barrymore is the lead of this movie. And then it turns out she's not after the first.
Why? What happens to her, Todd?
She packs up and moves away.
She moves away. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Her parents do the responsible thing. Okay.
She graduates high school and moves on. Like,
it's college.
Valedictorian. Yeah.
Then she goes back to high school and,
and never been kissed. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
Dewey's there.
They're all related.
For the record, it is Drew Barrymore that's in the that's the face on that poster.
That's like the big face, like with the hand covering.
It is her visage. Obviously, they wash it out and everything, so it's but it's her. People, a lot of people think it's Neve Campbell, and it's like, look at her eyes. I don't know.
Like, look into her eyes.
No, you're not wrong. That's a good way to look at it too. As far as that's a movie that marketed the fact Drew Barrymore is in this movie and she's going to be terrified by something. You don't necessarily think that's the opening. She's dead. And now we're going to spend time with Party of Five. Like, that's not necessarily what everybody anticipated.
I mean, it was intention to have the Janet Leigh effect. That's what they wanted. I mean,
for sure.
Yeah.
That's how she was convinced to take the role. And yeah, a lot of stuff.
All right. Abe, what's your first pick?
Well, very similar to Todd, I also had Evil Ed 2, because you would not catch me in a video rental store picking up anything with a skull on it. And or anything with like a doll face on it. Spoilers for something coming up. But I had never seen this movie until maybe college. And I was like, oh, this movie is fucking hilarious. And, you know, I've seen a lot of Sam Raimi movies since. It still has a lot of Sam Raimi characteristics, camera movements and dolly zooms and all this other fun horror splash. But I would never have guessed that this movie would have been as fun, perhaps, when I was like 9 years old walking through Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. Again, never would have picked it up. My uncle had he took over a video rental store, never walked down the horror section, like, you know, just openly like picking things up, reading the back cover, just if I was interested. But Evil Dead 2, what a great pick.
Yeah, skeletons don't look at me. That's not right.
Exactly. Yeah, why? It's following me with its eyes.
Who left the eyeballs in the skeleton?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. This is not anatomically correct.
Why did they position them that way?
they were trying to mimic the Susanna Hoff's side eye look from the Walk Like an Egyptian.
Exactly that. Yeah. All right. My first pick is The Frighteners. This poster, I was incredibly intrigued by. It's 96. I'm 10 years old. I saw this poster everywhere leading up to its release when it made all that money, which was not very much because it was a huge bomb. But in theaters, in theaters, it had a kick-ass 3D poster. So you look at it and you have this like demon face that's kind of like that's like the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland. It moves around when you look at it, just like our Evil Dead face. It's always staring
but
at
But for real.
Yeah. But for real this time, yes. It was a kick-ass poster. I didn't see the movie in theaters. I had seen in the even the trailer, I can't recall. I think the later trailers give more of like a vibe of what it is, which is more, you know, obviously the horror comedy that it works as. I feel like the teasers, I could be mistaken, because I just haven't watched them in a long time. I feel like the teaser did play up the idea that it's, you know, a haunting new film from executive producer Robert Zemeckis. Like, it didn't want to necessarily throw in a supernatural comedy with Michael J. Fox. It wanted to leave more of the idea that there's ghosts and, you know, there's a Reaper and it's scary. how could this film bomb?
Who's Peter Jackson?
So yeah, like that, the poster itself, I was just completely sold on as far as being like, I don't want no part of this. The thing's chasing me around the theater every time I'm walking around. I don't want to deal with that. It wasn't until way late when I finally rented the movie for whatever reason. I think I rented it. I don't think I just watched it on TV. I think I rented the movie where it still had like the cover was still like the it was up. No, even the VHS and the DVD, they still had the lenticular going on, so you could still have the thing. So it still had the effect. They kept that going for quite a while. Seeing the movie, obviously it's a Peter Jackson horror comedy. Like, it's very fun. It's got, you know, it's like he was
got some tense moments.
It does. And he was initially aiming for PG-13. So it's not like the hardest of R's, you know, and there's some scenes inserted because by the time they knew they were getting an R, they're like, all right, we'll throw in a head, get blown off and stuff like that. But regardless, it is a very fun movie. And the imagery that's on the poster, like, that's kind of there, although not specifically that demon face. There's other stuff that's like popping through walls, but not that specifically. But I'm a big fan of the movie. But yes, it was compared to my expectation based on like what this ghoulish imagery is. It was certainly a different experience by the time I saw it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, The Frighteners.
Mm-hmm. Good pick.
Yeah. Todd, back to you. What's your next pick on the list here?
Well, this one, I don't know that it's so much misdirection on the part of the marketing, but it's just kind of, I think, my preconceived notions of what it was going to be.
Entirely
because it was a remake, you know. And so I'm talking about the 1988 remake of The Blob.
Okay.
Which I think going into it, we were all kind of like, I mean, it's a remake of The Blob. How serious am I supposed to take this? You know, and it's got Kevin Dillon. I mean, come on. I was rewatching earlier today the trailer, and you know, the trailer I think tries to maybe make you feel like it's going to be more serious. But again, you're sitting there going, "It's The Blob. It can't be that serious." And, you know, I'm not somebody that looks at the original movie and, like, thinks loftily of it. I think it's fun to watch because it's a cheesy monster movie, but it's not a good movie. So I was totally blown away when The Blob 1988 is a good movie. Oh, I mean, it's a lot of fun and just really one of the more creative and unique horror films of the late 80s. So, you know, I went into it thinking, this is just going to be cheesy. They're just playing off the name of this old 50s horror movie. You know, how good can this be? But it's very good. I have a lot of fun with The Blob remake.
Yeah, no, that Blob remake is awesome. It's Chuck Russell doing stuff, and it goes well with that. It's a little trifecta from the 80s of the Thing, The Fly, and The Blob. Those remakes hit and take the idea into a modernized new way. And that one, it has just enough mean in it. It doesn't, it's not super mean spirit, but it's got just enough. And it's a nice practical effects extravaganza as well.
Yeah. Frank Darabont wrote the screenplay.
He wrote the screenplay.
Right, yeah. No, it was the Elm Street reunion there for those two.
Chuck Russell.
Right,
Chuck Russell and, the poster, I think that the original poster is just like the silhouette and the pink, and then like the VHS covers this horrific image of the guy stuck in the blob.
His face is in the,
Right, yeah.
How much, I just don't know what the atmosphere was like at that point, but with The Fly and The Thing coming out, and obviously The Blob, as just mentioned, which are just so, you know, graphic in what they're doing, especially compared to their 50s counterparts. Were people aware of this? Like, were people walking into The Fly being like, oh, Cronenberg, that guy, we'll see what happens. Like, were they thinking, like, they're going to swap heads around?
I think with The Fly, I don't really have a memory of people being like shocked that it was, you know, not doing what the Vincent Price movie does, you know, because I think people going in were going, okay, it's Cronenberg. We know this is.
He has a few films under his belt at that point. So,
Yeah.
And the mentality is different back then, too. Like when they're remaking these old, cheapy horror films, they people are like, oh, they're updating them, modernizing them, and that was okay back then because a lot of people look back at those films and call them cheesy rather than watching them with an appreciation of how things were back then. Sure. Like, so a lot of stuff got dusted off as the old version was just cheesy. And then there's this new version. It was a lot more embraced, but it wasn't like a lot of remakes were coming off things that either didn't work the first time or were like considered dated. So that's why they got remade, not just like, hey, this is an A title, let's remake it. That kind of was the difference in the remake mentality.
Now, the logic is in that front is sound. I'm just curious more of like what the and like, yes. And
yeah, that's what 80s Twitter was kind of taking it as.
But. For sure. And but like the fly, I can understand because, yes, you have a certain director that has a bit of a notoriety at that point. Carpenter, I mean, he obviously has Halloween, but like. And even The Fog, but those aren't necessarily gore fest. The Thing does feel like something new at the time as far as how far it's willing to go. And I would be curious like what audiences were kind of expecting to get into beforehand.
Nobody was paying attention to The Thing.
Yeah, you know? Nobody saw it.
Why? What other movie came out on the same day?
another one nobody went to. There are two of the best visual effects movies ever that came out the same day, and everybody was still going to goddamn E.T. Damn it! No, which was also a great movie.
Drew Barrymore raises her head again.
That Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
And Frank Darabont wrote The Fly 2, by the way, also, just to put that out there. That's not me saying Fly 2 is good. I'm just saying that's the case.
I'm not going to say the Fly 2 is good, but I think the Fly 2 is very entertaining. I have fun with that one.
Got some moments.
All right. Brandon, what's your next pick?
My next pick, I'm going to take us back a bit. I'm going to go back to one of Hammer's films. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking the Brides of Dracula.
Oh.
The theatrical posters for this. While Christopher Lee as Dracula and the character of Dracula do not appear in this film, many of the posters include a figure that would suggest he's in the film, despite, you know, Lee's name's on it. And then when you say, hey, that figure might be referring to the other character that is a male vampire in this film. Well, they have posters that clearly look like that dude. So I feel they're trying to lead people to believe, yeah, this tall, dark figure, Dracula, Dracula's in this movie, maybe he's not. Van Helsing, Cushing, he's back, but
Peter
is not. Yeah, Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
So that one, there is a very Dracula figure in many of the multiple different iterations of the poster art carried over. While the other guy, the little blondie, clearly him in some of the posters as well. So, including one that has both of them. So that's where I'm going with this next.
I dig it.
I'm looking at them now. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's clearly a good poster. Hammer has awesome. I have a whole coffee table book full of Hammer. Hammer's like, entire I run. This. It's great.
Yeah, this like magenta.
I've got that one too. Yeah.
Yes,
it's great. You're telling me that guy who's big in the middle is not in the movie? Crazy.
Oh.
How dare they misguide me like this? Misrepresent me like this?
Right.
I do like that tagline, the most evil bloodlusting Dracula of the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
So. All right. Abe, what's your next pick?
I moved to 1991's The People Under the Stairs. And this is a movie that we talked about like pretty recently, Aaron.
Yeah.
On a special with Professor Mike Dillon. And it is, again, video store. I knew who Wes Craven was because I knew about, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, and I'd seen TV edited versions of it growing up. But I never would have picked this one up either. And then watching it, I was like, Aaron was like, this is like gateway horror, Abe. It's like, it's pretty easy to watch. I was like, what are you talking about? And then I watched it, and I was like, yeah, he's right. It's actually like pretty tame, and pretty harmless. A pretty good protagonist, and they get out at the end. It's actually pretty fun. Not what I was expecting from Wes Craven, because I think the moniker for him was like the master of horror, like even back in like the 80s and 90s. So, you know, anything with Wes Craven, I would never have picked up. But yeah, this one's actually fun. It's a fun watch. Pretty good, again, characters in there for you to go root for. So people on the stairs, young Abe is a fool for not watching this early.
It is one of those R ratings where it's less about the content and more about the, it's like Dick and Lorraine from Twin Peaks, but those actors, they're just too weird. Like it's like sure. there's a sadomasochistic thing going on in there, but at the same time it's just like they're not really doing a whole lot, but it's more the vibe of them is like R, like on which like, we can't rate this lower, Wes. But well, no, I mean,
another one with a giant skull on the poster.
There's another skull, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Giant skull on the poster.
What scares kids? Skulls and stuff.
Skulls.
Not scary enough. Put a skull on it.
Teenagers would love it, though.
it is like right in that 80s, 90s era of like we can actually get artists to like provide an interpretation that's not entirely accurate. And that's what largely the purpose of this episode. But it is like it's an evocative poster, but it's like it doesn't really say anything about the film. Even the tagline's like three lines of dialogue because it's like we need to like describe this in some way. It's like, yeah, it's Wes, neighborhoods. They, like it's
escape,
like reaching
Escape House, the movie.
It's reaching to try to like give you anything to grasp onto because like the title's cool. The people under the stairs were like, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah.
And if you're thinking like, you know, S&M couple, missing kids, and gentrification. Bingo, I guess you got it.
it's all here, folks.
Well, this was really at a time, too, where they were really banking on Wes Craven's name and things. It felt like every movie was like you were saying, Wes Craven's new vision of horror.
Sure. Or,
like, I remember when the other one, Shocker, came out, and it was all about, this is Wes Craven's new Freddy Krueger, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I have enough picks where I'm going to just leave Shocker off the board at this point because I had considered it. But since we're talking about Wes Craven already, I mean, it's a similar thing. And certainly one where when you're walking through the video store and you see Mitch Pileggi, an actor whose name we all knew at that time, on the poster getting electrified.
X-Files is Mitch Pileggi.
Like my thought was always, so is the movie after this or are we leading up to this point? Like I never like... real understanding like, what's the deal exactly going to happen here, like it's a great poster. It's very visceral, it's like in your face, like this guy's, it's called Shocker, guess what, this guy's getting shocked, and I'm like, yeah, okay, so then what happens, like what, and if you were to assume rock and roll electro demon, I mean, again, bingo, you nailed it, like that's what it is.
Should have played the lottery.
But again, that's not my pick.
I love it. That's a great title for a movie right there. Rock and Roll Electro Demon.
I'd see
that movie.
I thought that was going to be the original sequel to Phantom of the Paradise, but they scrapped those ideas, I guess. My actual pick is going to be Cabin in the Woods. Now, this one's a bit tricky because the film was delayed for years, and that had to do a lot with MGM having money troubles. Weird, I know. MGM, money troubles. But the movie itself, I specifically avoided the posters because that was a movie where even then I knew, like, from people that have seen test screenings and whatnot, they're just like, going blind. This movie has, like, a lot of surprises.
Don't look at the poster.
Don't. And inevitably, I saw posters. But even the posters are still like, I don't know what this is going to be. The movie's literally called Cabin in the Woods. It's written by Joss Whedon and directed by Drew Goddard. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's obviously going to be some kind of subversion of some kind. But I didn't know what that was going to be. So by the time I finally got to see this movie with Tall Ken, friend of the show, it surprised me as far as I didn't know what it was because I just knew Cabin in the Woods and this guy that played Thor was in it. But so seeing, like, where it was going, it's like, okay, so it's a Cabin in the Woods story, but there's this other thing. Okay, so what's this going to lead to? And then it just kind of keeps building on itself and revealing more and more. And I really appreciated, like, how it laid out. The trailer does, like, give away a lot of stuff, but not entirely. Like, for a movie that's bound to bomb just by nature of what it is, I do think the marketing, as limited as it was, did their best with what they could without, like, giving away the entire game. But regardless, I didn't see the marketing because I was avoiding it. So just going based on there's a poster with like a Rubik's Cube of a cabin. I don't know what that means. And it's like a screed of sorts on like horror films of like certain kinds of results or whatnot to please. It's, you know, it's got a lot, you know, we all seen Cabin in the Woods. It has a lot of layers.
And no, I haven't.
And I very much liked what the result was. I liked having just nothing to go off of and being presented with this thing that I found to be better than just good, but very, very, very good.
Yeah. One of the best title sequence scares in my life.
A jump scare title sequence. Yes. It works really well.
How was your weekend?
All right, Todd, back to you. What's your next pick here?
So this is one that I remember seeing on the video store shelves forever when I was a teenager. Never got to see it till a few years ago. This is Prophecy from 1979.
Oh, okay.
Not The Prophecy with Christopher Walken. This is Prophecy. This is the John Frankenheimer movie, which look up the poster right now.
Looking at it.
Describe the poster.
So this thing, I would see this sitting on the video store shelf, and I was like, oh, okay, this is like an alien movie because it looks like some kind of a weird alien beast thing in an egg. It looks like an embryo or something like that. It's in an egg. And so I was like, okay, this is some alien monster horror movie thing. I finally get around to watching this about 5-6 years ago. And so I am surprised to find that this is actually an animals attack movie. That thing is a bear. That is a mutated bear. And so this is a movie about, like, you know, there's a evil corporation and they're doing things that are messing up the environment and the Native Americans are angry. And apparently the bears are mutating and attacking people. And it's actually a fun movie. I enjoy this one quite a bit. It's got a really memorable kill that involves a sleeping bag and a tree. And I won't say anything more than that. But just looking at this thing, I mean, for 30, 40 almost years, I thought this is an alien movie, and it's not. It's about bears.
Mm-hmm. And you have Talia Shire in there, and
Rocky's wife.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Michael Corleone's sister. Yeah,
Vito's daughter. Like, it's, Armando Santé, right? He's in there also.
Caesar's mom.
Caesar's mom.
Dredd's brother.
David Seltzer, guy who wrote The Omen.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. No relation to Alka.
Yeah.
That's helped a lot of people.
2 points.
Thank you.
Prophecy. Thank you for that. Good pick. Brandon, what's next?
Okay. This is my pick number 3. This is where we fact check the Happy Birthday to Me poster. This is poster famous with the shish kebab kill on the front of it, which doesn't quite happen like this in the movie. And there's like maybe a piece of meat on the shish kebab when it kills the person.
Mm-hmm.
But at the top, it clearly says, John will never eat shish kebab again. Well, there are 0 characters in this movie named John. The character killed, spoilers, with the shish kebab is Steven. It then says, Steven will never ride a motorcycle again. Obviously, I just told you he was killed with the shish kebab. A teen is the character killed on the motorcycle, not Steven. Greg, they got that one right. He'll never lift weights again. There's got some mistakes on here with this one. I will say they got it right, though. 6 of the most bizarre murders you will ever see. There are 6. How bizarre they are is up to you. But this movie contains one of the most batshit crazy twists to reveal into its climax that you'll ever see in a slasher. So maybe the murders aren't bizarre, but why, what's happening, and who's doing them? That'll do it for you. Happy birthday to me. I like the movie. It's a bit long for a slasher.
Yeah, yeah.
80 slasher. It's about 2 hours.
Oh, but
it's a solid one. It features some of your favorite Canadian slasher horror stars in it as well. But it's a solid one. But this poster, no fact checking done beforehand. So Here we are.
I remember this one too from the video store era, seeing it on the shelf. And I mean, I didn't know what the heck a shish kebab was. I'm some kid from the suburbs, you know, chicken nuggets. Okay. I don't know what a shish kebab is. So looking at that poster image, I was like, is he like puking? What is that? I can't tell what's going on in that image, you know? And, I did get to see this one again, fairly recent watch for me, a couple of years ago, and everything Brandon's saying there is accurate. It's enjoyable. It's directed by J. Lee Thompson,
which is wild to me.
Wild is the word I think of whenever I think of J. Lee Thompson. I mean, because this is the guy that, you know, did
Guns of Navarone,
Charles Bronson movies,
Cape Fear. You know. Like, he goes so far back. So this is a wild.
Yeah. But I mean, he was kind of the go-to guy for Bronson in the canon years, and there's a lot of bonkers stuff that show up in some of those J. Lee Thompson movies. So I am always thrilled to see his name on there, because you just know you're gonna get something crazy when he's involved.
It also has Lisa Langlois, who is in a bunch of little horror movies, but she was also notable because Linda Hamilton got injured during or right before Terminator, and she was actually brought in to replace her, and then Cameron decided, I'm going to wait. So she could have been Sarah Connor. She was for a moment, but she could have been, had they not waited on Linda Hamilton, she would have been Sarah Connor.
They can bring her back now at one of these these alternate universe sequels they do, right?
Aaron, they have too much respect for the product of Terminator to do that.
Oh, sure.
JK.
If we ever see the doctor from Genesis, you know, if he has his way.
I liked it when you pronounced it Genesis.
Hey, what's next?
2011's You're Next. This is a movie that I was watching. I think that Aaron has led me to like a lot of horror, because Aaron's like that kind of guy where he's just like, Abe, it's going to be safe. Like, you're going to like this one. And I was like, okay, I believe you, except for when we have to watch Terrifier 3 coming up.
I don't lie to you. I don't lead you astray.
This is true. Yeah. You're Next. The poster is, you know, it's the Animal Mass poster. But what this movie, when you're watching it, it actually turns into like this kick-ass, like almost like counter revenge type movie. And it actually becomes like this action horror movie. There are still kills. There are still dead bodies. There are still very like strange images, it is a, to me, like some sort of subversion of, well, you know, the final girl isn't the one that's like running and scared. She actually kind of goes on the hunt at some point too, because she's like this badass woman who's been raised in the Australian outback. But You're Next is a movie that I would have probably never picked up on had somebody, not Aaron in this case, been like, Abe, it's actually this pretty dope movie, you should go check it out. So, yeah, 2011's You're Next.
You know, it's funny. We had mentioned Cabin in the Woods with that. And do you remember with the summer You're Next came out and everybody was like, it's going to be the next Cabin in the Woods. It's going to do Cabin in the Woods.
I don't remember that.
Like, there was some, like, because, like, Cabin in the Woods came out, what, August, the year it came out?
I believe it's, or I think it's a March movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Or was it March? I remember Your Next came around, like, a year later around the same spot, and everybody thought, it was going to be
Cabin in the Woods was April. Your Next was August.
August. Yeah. I just remember there being a thing like people thinking it was going to do Cabin of the Woods type business or be appreciated.
Like, no business. Like, that's what they're thinking.
I don't know.
Cabin in the Woods famously did nothing. Like,
it
did.
All right, or was it the reverse? I can't remember. I don't know. There was like hype behind Your Next and it just did not pan out.
In terms of like a reception, because they're both like geek friendly and like internet favorites, that goes. But I can get that, because yes, it has Your Next sort of, because of like Abe, you're mentioning the subversion aspect. That whole element of it that certainly puts it in the same realm as a film like Cabin in the Woods, where it's doing more than just being a traditional slasher. That is a fun pick, because yes, you're getting something. You have an idea of what you're going for based on like people in masks and they have knives, and
big axes. And the movie does open up all that way, you know, very traditional
home invasion. Oh no,
exactly, And then again, women on the run kind of thing, and what's happening? And then all of a sudden, you're just like, this is really fun. It's a cool watch.
It also is quite funny when it wants to be as well. something Adam Wingard knows how to do, especially in his horror films, knows how to do.
Winnie?
Yes. My pal, Adam Wingard. All right, that's on me, right? What's next? Yeah. What do I have on my list here? Oh, of course, Chopping Mall.
Hey. I had that one on my list too. Yep.
This was an easy pick. Chopping Mall. It took me a long time to finally see Chopping Mall. Actually, when the Vestron special edition Blu-ray came out, that's when I finally caught up with it.
That's when it debuted.
Now, the poster of Chopping Mall is like Chopping Mall, big letters in blood. There's a severed hand and it's holding a bag, and in the bag there's like a face in it and whatnot. I never looked too closely at the Chopping Mall poster because I figured, I get it. There's a hand and he's holding it back. So I never realized, oh, it's a robotic hand. Even with that in mind, that still doesn't entirely give you like what the film is. So from my perspective, Chopping Mall, I just figured it's a mall slasher movie, right? Kids are standing at the mall after hours or something, and like somebody's going after them. That was my assumption of what Chopping Mall is. But you know what happens when you make assumptions? You make an ass out of you, an umption. So with that in mind, finally seeing Chopping Mall, I was not prepared for the high-tech wizardry that would be involved in the horror taking place in this film, because it is not, in fact, about some slasher in a mall, but in fact about a robot culled from the era of 80s robots goes a bit berserk.
Johnny Five.
goes a bit berserk and causes all kinds of mayhem and what have you. This movie rocks. I was such a big fan of watching it. Finally seeing it and everything. But it rocked in a way I was just not expecting. I just figured, all right, there's some people I recognize in this. Let's see where this goes. It's like, oh, it's like a full-on robot horror movies. The impression of Chopping Mall I got versus what it actually is, just wildly different sides of the coin. And I was very happy
it's a severed like robot hand.
That's what I'm saying. Right? Never looked closely at the poster. I just figured there's, you know, from a distance looking at a VHS box, you're like, hand hold good. I'm
eyeball in the bag.
Eyeball in the bag. Like, I know what this is. No reason for closely inspect this. I can move on. Move on to the next scary VHX box that I'm not going to rent.
Why doesn't the poster have Kelly Maroney, Barbara Crampton, Chopping Mall? Why isn't it that?
That is what you would say. I hear you.
I'm just glad somebody used that title at some point. I mean, you know,
it is a good title.
Yes. Chopping Mall.
That is a good title.
It's a great title.
Which is also misleading. There's no chopping.
It's better than Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge.
Most movies are better than Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge.
Yeah. Like, what? Just no, I will say Phantom of the Mall. Yeah.
Talking about mall-based horror movies, I do have a soft spot for The Initiation.
Yes, which, that's a good one.
Somewhat misleading title-wise, because you don't think it has anything to do with the mall, but it mostly takes place in a mall. And it's fun, featuring the Fly 2's Daphne Zuniga in an early
horror, underappreciated horror princess Daphne Zuniga. Yeah.
What's next up?
Well, I guess since we've been talking about severed hands, let's go to House from which year is that? What's 1985?
85,
80 something.
The one which has the wonderful poster with a floating zombie hand pushing the doorbell of the aforementioned house, which of course this does not happen in the movie. You get William Catt and George Wendt and Richard Mull, but you don't get floating hands, zombie hands ringing the doorbell. But still, I think House is fun. I enjoy that movie. And the sequel, House 2, The Second Story.
One of my favorite titles. Mm-hmm. Favorite That's subtitles of all time.
Wonderful.
That one has a similar poster, and I actually have that poster. I was that kid that went to the video stores on the way home from school every day and said, which posters will you sell me for a few bucks? And that one I've still got tucked away down here.
The finger's a key, right, in that one?
Yeah, I think it's turning a key in that one, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're still patting themselves on the back for that subtitling.
I just like the idea that you never see the house in the first one so they could reveal, oh, there's a second story. That'd be a fun way to go. But obviously,
and which one is George Wentz in one of those, right?
In the first
George,
one.
George Wentz in the first one. First and one. Then Ratzenberger is in the
second one. You know what scares people?
One.
Yeah. Cheers, cast members. That'll.
And then it always threw me, too, because, like, all of a sudden one day at the video store, there popped up House 4. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a second, what happened to House 3? And House 3 is that movie called The Horror Show.
Yep.
Which has a similar premise to Shocker, if I remember correctly, where a guy is killed in the electric chair and then comes back.
It features a rock and roll electro demon?
Yeah.
What's House 4? The Repossession. These titles, man, these are good. these are fun. I like this. The house crew knows what they're doing, apparently. Repossession.
Well, and then, of course, there's that other house, the
House
Sue, you know, with which, you know, you'll just think is a happy cat movie unless you know any better.
I'd actually say that house, I think it comes as advertised. You get a big cat going, and you're like, yeah, that's my face when I'm watching House. It rules. It's great. Well, very good. House. Brandon, what's your next pick?
All right, this is my this one's my tribute to my slasher gods here, so it's gonna be a like a multi-part thing, but they go here. So Friday the 13th part 5, New Beginning, the VHS cover has this like bland, like the like somebody at the grocery store doesn't know what Jason's mask looks like, but here it is. It's got no markings on it, nothing, just like, what is this mask? They have, funnily enough, there is a Nika action figure or any figure that comes with a head option on this one to change Jason's head to this bland VHS cover mask, which he's never worn in any of the movies. Of note, when the Friday the 13th series was coming, they were having a DVD release from Paramount, and their menus, I want to know here that the mask they use in them is the Roy Burns mask from part 5. So it's got the double blue markings here, and they use that across the board. So you'll find it on the part 3, 4, 5, 6, up to Manhattan. Wrong person. That's not Jason. It's Roy Burns when you wear that. But that is all over their trivia. DVD and Blu-ray releases of Friday the 13th. Of note, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, and Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, the mask does not look like what it is on the poster at all for both of those.
4 specifically, because 4 is so distinct looking. So when you look at the poster, you're like, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah,
that's not the same.
And then lastly, one of my favorite posters of all time, which it's right over here. I rock it over here, is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. The depictions of the Dream Warriors and a couple of the weapons on there are a bit inaccurate, but I'll let it go because it's a sick poster, but they're not quite accurate. But that's my slasher gods section of their mistakes.
Love it.
It's good to bring those up because I don't have them on. They're like in this giant list that I have, so I don't want to like mention them in full. But yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street in general, but like the first one also similarly has great art, but it certainly doesn't reflect like Freddy Krueger necessarily. It reflects some kind of dream demon, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There's a woman in bed and there's some kind of thing clawing at her. But it's it's a neat drawing, but it's like, but what is this?
Well,
Part two, similar. Yeah.
Part two, similar. It's Jesse looking in the mirror and he's got the glove, but it's like a skull. Give it them skulls. On there as well, which the Elm Street posters of the slasher people, I think they have the best art.
They have cool, original artwork going on for sure.
Yeah,
at least two is like thematically correct, right?
It is thematically
like
correct.
It's doing the job.
And they totally walked away from that for the VHS box on part two, because VHS is just an image of Freddy.
He's cutting through the box.
Fire behind
him.
This is how I get revenge. Yeah.
Speaking of fire behind him, Friday the 13th, or not Friday the 13th, it's Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday.
Oh, yeah.
That was also one that I was looking into, because that one is what I saw in video stores for sure. This is prime 93 Aaron mm-hmm. right here walking mm-hmm. into the mom and pop video store before that closed down because of those fucking blockbusters you guys are all nostalgic for.
you had membership too.
A preferred Hollywood Video.
I did, yeah.
I preferred Hollywood Video because once it was the only option available, I still preferred Hollywood Video.
Yeah, but they also had a better anime selection than Blockbuster.
There was a mom and pop store like less than a mile from where I am right now. Now it's a Little Caesars, but it was like it was just an old fashioned video store. But they had a giant poster for Jason Goes to Hell, which is of course shiny silver metal mask with the weird like worm demon thing like crawling through both eye sockets. It's insane. I did not see Jason Goes to Hell in full finally until the Shout Factory DVD Blu-ray box set came out. To finally experience what this movie is all about. But I certainly had that imagery in my mind forever. Boy, is that not in the movie whatsoever. that's not a thing at all. The mask is not shiny. There is a weird bug thing, but that's hardly like the crux of the film, let alone it doesn't look nearly as menacing as this fucking thing does it looking at right now. Like, this thing looks insane. It's such a like my 7-year-old brain could not handle, like, nothing could match what my head was thinking at that point in time. Mm-hmm. We could get this poster in like a giant like canvas that's like sitting on the floor being like, look, now available on VHS. But regardless, that's that movie. Abe, what's your next pick?
Well, while you're on the subject of the inaccuracies and the false marketing of the Friday the 13th series, I mean, Jason Takes Manhattan, that subtitle alone is kind of misleading, because the more accurate title for that movie would be Jason Takes a Boat. There's not a whole lot of Manhattan in that movie.
Is Bride of Frankenstein Toronto, inaccurate? Anyway. Is Bride of Frankenstein inaccurate?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Goes up in the last like act. Yeah,
Jason takes an East Coast cruise. I get it. I mean, it makes
from
sense.
A lake.
Yeah,
we're just saying that, you know, the ferries are free sometimes.
Everybody knows that Camp Crystal Lake has a small isthmus that leads out into the bay. It leads right out into the bay over there, and you sail right into New York to die right into the Big Apple. That's how it works.
This is why Mrs. Voorhees chose it. Yeah.
That is exactly what it was. Yeah, the water access. That's what she was going for.
Yeah. Geez.
She knew there'd be saltwater fish that would filter in so she'd have more more biology classes at summer camp.
Congratulations looking out for the future generation. Secret word isthmus into the podcast.
This is a good one.
Don't tell everybody.
I've not heard that in many years.
Abe, what's your next pick?
My next one is 1986's Dolls. This is a movie I saw as a child, and I was like, this is the fucking scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then as an adult, I watched it, and I'm like, this is pretty lame. It's just a bunch of dolls that are, like, they just animatronic style dolls. And I also had not seen, what was the one where, like, they're all, like, German
Puppet Masters. Yeah. Nazi dolls. Yeah.
And I had seen, like, one of those much later, too. But I remember watching this as a kid through like really closed eyes, Dolls, 1986 Dolls, really closed eyes. And I just remember thinking to myself, okay, cool. I'm a child too. And they don't hurt the child in this movie. So I'm good. But then again, watching as an adult, you're just like a lot of like stop motion animation stuff, a lot of like situations where an adult can easily just be like, man, fuck this doll and kick it and just like push it out of the way or something. But, these things do not happen to the adult in this movie, especially like the people that try to break in and steal some stuff. But 86's Dolls used to scare me wildly. I would never look at the poster because the poster is like a doll holding its eyes at the side. But again, watching it with full sensibilities of an adult, you're just like, it's suitable, I guess, for a fun scare, but not really all that fun either.
All right.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Dolls, so I don't. I have seen the poster. Gordon. That's a Stuart Gordon movie, Dolls?
I think. It's
Stuart Gordon. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I will not hear this heresy on Master Stuart. But
raise my bit on my cue here, Stuart Gordon. I didn't realize.
Yes,
I've never actually seen a Puppet Master movie. However. And that's why I don't have it on my list.
You haven't seen any of the like 13 Puppet Master movies?
I haven't. But
missing out?
I don't have it on my list because of that. Because I can't see what I'm missing out on, apparently. But I will say those posters did do the job, because there's like that, especially when you're a child, because there's that one that's like got the silver hair and the black hat. I assume his name is like Blade. He's got like knife hands and stuff. He's in like, he seems like he's in like all of them, or at least a majority of them. I feel like he's probably
the guy,
one of the fan favorites of the Puppet Master things.
He's a drill head guy.
He's a drill head guy who I assume his name is probably Drill. But
actually it's Chester.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Just some clever kills in some of those Puppet Master movies though.
But I mean the posters did the job as far as being a child and being like, there's one, then like a year later it's like, there's another one, he's still there.
Right.
Like, you know, it has that kind of effect on me. I haven't seen them because both I know that they're nothing but mostly terrible, and the whole they're Nazi dolls thing is like, I don't necessarily need another Nazi thing in my life right now. So I think I'm good. Yeah.
So the drill head guy is so there's a big guy and he's like got huge hands, he's Pinhead, and the drill head guy is Torch.
Not a name I would have thought of.
Yeah.
You do what you do.
Yeah.
What's my getting actual all this
from Puppet Masterpedia, I guess.
Yeah, the wiki page on Puppet Master.
They definitely probably
have
one. Well,
there's another. Okay, there's two drill head guys. One is Tunneler, and the other's Torch. Sorry. I haven't seen these in a long time, because they're not really of the rewatch.
Wow, dude. I just counted like 15 of these. Jeez.
There's Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, which that's kind of misleading, because it's like it ends up being this one-on-one battle between one of them and one of them. So it's not really...
It's their Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
Hey, whoever wins, you lose.
That's AVP.
It applies to most movies. It's the best tagline because it's universal.
Yeah, it is really good.
Yeah, Cinderella, whoever wins, you lose. the next film I have is pretty much my whole inspiration for doing this episode. It's another Peter Jackson film. It is, of course, Brain Dead, aka Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Hey.
This poster had never left my mind when I was a child. The poster, the VHS box, which is, of course, a woman holding her mouth open, and there's like a little skeleton head inside. Also has eyes. Big on skeletons of eyes, I guess. That's where we're at with these things. And my mind has always been, what could this possibly be? Like, and it's goofy enough where, as opposed to, of course, these Puppet Master posters, terrifying. This one's goofy enough where I'm like, is this scary? Is it just weird? Is there actually a person inside of her? Like, what's the Jerry side? But what's the deal? What's going on with this?
What's the deal?
I did not know.
And hey, you don't want to go in there.
And I would not find out until I think when the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out. And I was like, I should really catch up on this Peter Jackson character, because I certainly like that Frighteners.
Did you watch Bad Taste?
I still haven't seen.
Meet the Feebles?
I've seen Meet the Feebles. Here's what happened with Bad Taste. Bad Taste is a movie where I've had opportunities to watch it, not in a theater like or a screening or anything, but like at home. And I'm like, Peter Jackson's so devoted to restoring his stuff, I'm just going to wait out like a Blu-ray, which is still not like really. There's no Blu-ray for Bad Taste, right? Is there?
No, I have a DVD set of like a cheapy like 10 films, and it's in there. So
So I've been holding out on that, and Meet the Feebles I saw a while. Like I have like barely any memory because it's been so long at this point. So I'm just sitting here waiting for like a good copy of those movies, because I can watch it for real, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I watch it like in a, you know, not some very.
It's like a lot of Italian horror. Like I used to not care for it, but now I've seen the proper cuts and restorations. I'm like, I love these. But back in the day on VHS, no.
It's like when I was holding out foolishly, be like, Kill Bill, it's going to get that whole Bloody Affair edition. Why should I buy these DVDs? I'm not a sucker. I held out for the Sin City Deluxe Edition, and that came out. Why would Kill Bill not come out? And it's 21 years later, and there still is not a whole Bloody Affair special edition, except for the one on eBay that I do have. So there's that. So Dead Alive. A movie that also doesn't have a fancy, it has a Blu-ray, but not like a fancy special edition, even though Peter Jackson's promised this. But I did finally see this movie, and it's a delight. it's the pre-Shaun of the Dead rom-zom-com that I certainly
really,
really love. It's so enjoyable. It compared to the Frighteners, this is such an R-rated movie as far as the amount of gore. Like it touts itself as being like the goriest film of all time at that point. Like it has so much buckets and buckets of things. There's a pretty infamous lawnmower scene,
yep.
That where just everything's everywhere, but the tone is so light. It's like, I can't say bring the kids, but it is a movie where like your son Brandon could probably handle Dead Alive at this point. I just, like,
possibly, yeah.
It's so over the top, but also the sensibility is so geared more towards Lionel has to, you know, stand up to his mother and get Paquita to be his girlfriend. I love that their name's Paquita. That's the best. it's very easy to remember offhand. So all of this is to say, compared to the poster, which again is a woman stretching her mouth open so a little head pops out, this movie is a delight. It's like the Paddington of horror zombie comedy.
What?
Like, it's so sweet. it's so sweet nature.
Paddington.
It's so sweet nature to what it's doing. So with one exception, there is a crazy baby zombie creature that is insane. If you thought like one of the few redeeming things in Beetlejuice, Get Away From Me, Beetlejuice is that baby Beetlejuice. Sure. This is better. This baby rules in this movie. This baby does all kinds of stuff, and it's real. It's no figment of anybody's imagination.
One was made for merch purposes. The other was not.
Exactly. So let's write that wrong. Let's get the Dead Alive 4K out here, and then get the merch tie-ins. Let's get the Paquita action figures and the Lionel with a lawnmower and this fucking baby that you like punt around like a little football as it bites you. I need this in my life. It makes you squeeze it and it makes noises.
Wow.
I so want Peter Jackson to like do this again in the same way that like Raimi was like, you know what? Maybe I should take a break from $200 million Spider-Man movies and make Drag Me to Hell. I want Peter Jackson so desperately to be like, let me make one of these again. Let me just go to Annoweta. Let's have a weekend in the backyard and just make something silly. I really want that to happen.
I have to go see this movie now. You've really sold me.
Oh, Dead Alive rules. Oh, my God. It's so fun.
It can be yours on Blu-ray for $137.
Wow, so it's out of print.
Only?
Okay.
Oh, it's been notoriously out of print forever.
Wow.
And Jackson's been like, oh, I'm restoring it. And then he gets into, like, Beatles
all
footage.
The Beatles.
We never see Dead Alive.
Yeah, exactly. One day.
Abrams restored Phantasm while working on Force Awakens. You can do this, Jackson. Jeez. It wasn't even his movie.
At least Guillermo like has results for all the stuff that's on his list. Jackson's like, come on, where's Tintin already? Where's our Tintin sequel? Like, what's going on here?
Hey, Guillermo used to be like a thousand projects.
Oh, yeah. But he's at least delivering on them. Like
But he used to be like, I've got this. Blah, blah. I was like, what? But now he's stressed.
He did want to do those things. That's more of like they wouldn't give him the money. Like it's not like he was sitting there being like, I'm lazy today, I'm not gonna do it. He's more like he's desperately negotiating.
They had that Thunder Mountain pitch for the Lovecraft movie with Cameron
Tom Cruise. That's what I assume that photo is. It's all of them negotiating this deal for Netflix.
Hope, you know, we need like a movie about doing that pitch. That would be great. Someone listening, make it.
Meanwhile, Jackson, come on. Let's get this thing going. All right. Are we on? What are we on? Are we on our final ones?
Our last one.
All right. Yeah, Todd, what's your final pick? Time.
We'll end with a pretty bad movie here. The notorious Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh, okay.
Warm side of the door.
1984's Killer Santa Claus movie, which, I mean, first of all, part of why I think this one fits, the poster is inaccurate for one thing, because it's, you know, the chimney with the arm holding the axe, Santa Claus coming down. Santa Claus never comes down the chimney in this. In fact, you know, I was just thought, okay, that's Phoebe Cates's dad in this image. From
that's why, yeah, he's just dead. That's the reason he died.
Exactly.
But I, part of my whole thinking of this movie when it comes to like misleading stuff is because I remember when this came out and all the controversy that there was, and you know, there were these groups that were protesting, and Siskel and Ebert got on their high horses and were like shaming the filmmakers on their show. You know, you should be ashamed of yourselves and all this stuff. And, you know, just created this image in my mind. You know, as a teenager at the time, I'm like, oh, this has got to be like one of the most grotesque movies ever made. You know, and plus there was the playground chatter, you know, like people would talk about it. Oh yeah, I heard there's this scene where, like, I remember one of my friends saying, oh yeah, there's a scene in it where Santa Claus kills a baby and then gift wraps it and put it under the tree. And I'm like, that sounds horrible. Put these people in jail. Obviously none of that stuff happens in this movie. This is a pretty run-of-the-mill slasher movie that is not all that interesting. It definitely does not live up to all of its hype that people gave. I mean, it's definitely one of those cases where people probably would have ignored this movie had people not put up such a fuss about it. I mean, it's not even the first movie of 1984 that had a killer Santa Claus.
No.
There was a movie called They're Playing with Fire, which, I mean, talk about misleading. That one, if you look at the posters and stuff, you think, oh, this is a teenage guy gets involved with an older woman comedy type of thing. It then turns into a bit of a slasher movie, and one of the kills involves a guy dressed up as Santa Claus. So it's like, it happened earlier in the year and you didn't have a problem with it, but suddenly when this movie came out, people were all up in arms and probably did way more business than it would have had people just kept quiet.
Well, certainly, because there's five of these fucking movies.
I know.
Well, including one with Mickey Rooney, who was all about hating this movie. So, like, what's funny is this is how dumb the people can be about things. So this movie came out, and it opened the same weekend as A Nightmare on Elm Street. It topped Nightmare on Elm Street at the box office. And then it made it for 2 weeks. And then they pulled it after two weeks.
They pulled it.
And all the people were like, ha, 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 we did it. And it's like, no, they made their money back and then some and then some and then some. And then they pulled it out because
they re-released it again, I think, in spring of 85 and made some more money. Yeah.
And also 1980. So there was also Christmas Evil that had a killer Santa. And then David Hess, one of his only directorial films, maybe his only feature film, was To All a Good Night, which had a killer in a Santa outfit as well. This wasn't the first time. They just chose anger because the poster, I think, is effective.
It's good poster work.
Yeah. I remember this one had the big VHS box when it came out.
Oh yeah, it was one of those chunky boxes. I remember Supergirl also had a big chunky box. A
lot of styrofoam inside of it. But yeah, so like, that's the funny thing about this one. And Nightmare on Elm Street probably can thank it for bowing out of the box office for allowing it to be the only game in town with a horror movie back in 1984. Saturday Night Deadly Night 2, like, that's the way to watch this one, because about three quarters of that movie is this one again, but in shorter chunks, and then you get a great so bad it's good type movie to go with it. Saturday Night, Deadly Night, and there are six of these things, because they did a remake with Malcolm McDowell.
I do like that Gremlins will come along like a year later and it'd be, you know, also horror.
It's the same year.
It's 84. Okay. Yeah. So it's coming along and it's doing the same thing as far as kind of treating Christmas badly, but it's got Spielberg's name on it, right? And it's wholesome by comparison, right? So it's fine.
And that one is, you know, a lot of people say Gremlins and Temple of Doom were what caused the PG-13 to come along. And the thing about Gremlins, I mean, with Temple of Doom, everyone was like, oh yeah, the heart ripping. Oh, you know, kids don't need to see that. With Gremlins, they weren't as upset about, you know, like Gremlins melting in the microwave and things like that. It was the Phoebe Cates story about Santa Claus that the parents were like, oh no, we didn't sign up for this. You know?
Yeah. We didn't sign up for this part randomly.
We weren't here to guide as a parental. Our guidance was not needed.
They can only cover eyes. They can't cover ears.
There's
only my child was 13. What could I do?
They'd understand that parents will do this for their kids. Dress up as Santa and just die in the chimney.
There's a path I can see where a parent brings their child to a movie called Gremlins because Spielberg's name's attached to it and it looks kind of fun. And then you get to the movie and Phoebe Cates has a very long monologue about how there is no Santa Claus. Regardless of how that story plays out, I can see the logic that would bring someone to like have a complaint to say.
They're That's just thinking me. They're lucky stars. Oh. The original script got made more family.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go find this original script.
Oh, they, yeah.
They're, way darker. Yeah. Okay.
Gizmo is Stripe in that one. And the mom's head comes rolling down the stairs when Billy comes home.
Not Billy's mom, who's so nice. Yeah.
I was watching, unrelated, I was watching Albert Brooks's Real Life last week because it came out on Criterion. Uh-huh. I didn't realize that the Charles Grodin's wife, that's the same wife, mom in Gremlins.
Oh.
And the, is the grandma from Back to the Future?
In Back to the Future, yes. Yeah.
She was a, yeah.
She had a lot of more wholesome roles. Anyway, Brandon, what's your last pick here?
So we're going to head to Euro trash territory now.
Yes.
Now there's a lot you could go through, but I'm going to specifically pull on the heartstrings of their lawless activity in making sequels of things that were not sequels to things. And we're going to focus on two of them. Granted, Evil Dead got throughout these. There's a, because in Europe, I think in Italy, Evil Dead was called La Casa, and they made like 9 La Casas.
Yeah,
including like Evil Dead being like La Casa 3 or 4, so, or Evil Dead 2 being that. So I'm focusing on two of the most notorious ones: Jaws 5, which is known as Cruel Jaws,
and Jaws.
Terminator 2, which is Shocking Dark.
Oh,
actually, let's throw a third one in there because there's also Alien 2 on Earth. So Cruel Jaws, this one is, so I, whenever, if you want to own it, buy it whenever someone announces they're selling it, because they, there's chance they could be sued or asked to remove it, because the film itself, I got it with a slipcover that has the Jaws 5 poster that they would have over there, which they said, we'll sell these slipcovers until we're given a cease and desist letter. And then there's footage from other Jaws movies and other shark movies in Cruel Jaws that they don't have the right to use. And this movie, it's fun. There's a guy who looks like a birthday party Hulk Hogan in it.
My favorite kind of Hulk Hogan.
Yes. It's a goofy little piece of trash. Shocking Dark, which is Terminator 2. Not as amusing as Cruel Jaws. And it's original. They don't use Terminator footage, but it's an interesting watch. And then there, you know, Alien 2 on Earth, which is, you know, this is before Aliens was ever released, and it tries to, it's boring as shit. That's just for them. But just fascinated by these Euro knockoffs. Which at one point I did own all the La Casa movies, but most of them weren't that great. There's one called like,
Problem. They weren't that great.
Yeah, there's one called Ghost House that was solid, and then there's one with Linda Blair and David Hasselhoff called Witchery, and basically it's an excuse to be like, so Linda Blair, can you act all possessed and crazy at the end of this? But yeah, the Euro knockoff stuff in full swing, even more so because they made a lot of Road Warrior and Escape from New York and Conan knockoffs back in the day, but like doing straight up calling your thing that.
Yeah.
Kind of misleading if you ask me.
Cruel Jaws. That's what I'm going to call it from now on.
Cruel Jaws. Yeah. Jaws 5. Yeah. Cruel Jaws, which might be more entertaining than Jaws 3, to be honest with you.
It probably moves. So that's a plus right there. La Casa 4 is Witchery.
La Casa 4 is Witchery. Yeah. So, yeah, there's like, yeah, the La Casa saga is a good one.
All right. Abe, what's your final pick?
My final pick here is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. I only watched the Halloween movies growing up, only Halloween 1 growing up. It was the edited for TV version. It would play every Halloween, which is why I enjoy watching it during Halloween. And I was always afraid of Michael Myers. I probably still am. And I remember I watched a lot of things out of order. So I'd seen H2O before. So that would be like 98, 99.
That's fine. It doesn't, the other ones don't count anyway on that one.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So but okay. I remember watching Halloween Season of the Witch like much later. And I was like, well, you know, let's finally do this, Abe. Like, let's be a good movie watcher here. Yeah. Let me step up here to the plate and watch this movie. And I was like, wait a minute. Michael Myers is not in this movie at all. And I'm kind of confused as to like who this guy who's cheating on his wife is, and why they're the story of this focus. Why they're the focus of the story?
They're separated. They're separated. I might be divorced. Yeah. I'm not sure.
But on its own merit, it actually was really fun. Like the concept of this anthology series for Halloween, but also these masks that kind of take over. And I was reminded of R.L. Stine's The Haunted Mask when I was watching this. But yeah, it's a good poster too, because it's got that weird, scary face, and it depends on which version you might see. But there's all the three masks from the silver something factory.
Shamrock. Silver Shamrock.
Shamrock. Yeah, Silver Shamrock Factory that are on the poster. But it's not a bad movie at all. And I kind of dig the idea of a Halloween anthology series if they had gone that way. But obviously Michael Myers has really just become its own beast and has grown beyond the initial films, the couple of films. So yeah, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Check it out.
How are they advertising that movie back when it came out, guys? You know?
They didn't. I mean, there's teaser stuff. But they were advertised. The tagline was "The night no one comes home," mm-hmm. which goes mm-hmm. in, you know, because the first one was "The night he came home." The second one was yeah. "More of the night he came home," and then this is "The night no one comes home." And then they didn't. I mean, they weren't like, "Hey, just FYI, Myers will not appear in this movie." But yeah. The trailers showed something else, and. You know, I mean, even the movie itself was so confusing. Roger Ebert thought Michael Myers was in the movie, which he's not wrong. Dick Warlock, who played Michael Myers in Halloween 2, is in the movie, but he thought the robot guys at the beginning were Michael Myers. But Michael Myers technically is in this movie on a TV screen.
I mean, I imagine Ebert is like, Halloween 3, huh? After he's just gone through like a bunch of other slashes he also didn't care for. I feel like he's like, I think I'll just sit in the back and close my eyes for a while. let's see where this goes.
Right. Yeah.
What I would give to see Ebert come back to review the Terrifier films, by the way. I just desperately want to know what he thinks.
We probably like him.
He might go back to 80s self and try to put Damien Leone's phone number on the screen and stuff and
write him.
Yeah, no, it was funny. Halloween 3, my daughter's seen it, and then I recently showed her the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and she, during while watching it, she nudged me, and she was like, this kind of reminds me of Halloween 3. I'm like, okay, reverse. Halloween 3 was ripping this movie off, but yeah. So, kind of funny.
All right. I have one more. I'm going to go pretty modern on this one. The Empty Man.
Okay. Yeah.
So this movie basically dumped by Fox because of the whole Fox is switching over to Disney, all this stuff. Basically just left this movie in limbo for a long time. It eventually like came out in a very small release, made no money, but it's like quickly gained a cult following. Now, I've seen The Empty Man. I think it's fine, but in terms of the impression that you would get if you just saw The Empty Man coming to theaters versus like what the movie actually is, there's a giant gulf there, which is why I'm picking it. This easily could have been just like a, you know, a routine like random urban legend type story about something called The Empty Man that's not unlike The Bye Bye Man or any number of these kind of throwaway haunted movies.
The tall man.
Slender Man. You know, any number of these things that are just like, oh, there's a thing we heard about. Let's just write a quick script and whatever. Director, writer David Pryor has taken, I guess he's adapted a book, and he's made this 137-minute cosmic horror film that is like wild. There's a like a good, I think like 25-minute like beginning to this movie that sets up like almost a, like basically a different movie. that's really effective and gets you on board right away before it gets into like the main story, which takes up another, you know, 2 hours involving James Badge Dale. And
cool.
Again, it like it seems like it's going down a certain path as far as, okay, somebody died and now we got to figure out why. Is it some weird myth or something? But like it has all these different things going on as far as weird cult conspiracies and what have you. Have either mm-hmm. have you guys seen the Brandon? Have you seen Empty Man?
I have not seen Empty Man.
It was on because it was on Hulu for a while before it left. It was on like Hulu and Max, and then it finally left. I think it's back somewhere now. I forget.
Okay.
I don't think it's got. It hasn't gotten a physical release yet. But like between the because it got released during COVID, it got released in October 2020. It came out, did nothing. Critics were like mostly negative. There were some that like saw what it was doing and kind of appreciated it more, but mostly got nowhere. But it so quickly figured like people just kind of started flocking to this thing because of how weird it is. Now, it's an investment because, again, it's 2 hours and 17 minutes. Like, it's a long movie and it doesn't need to be that long. And I'm not even saying it's great, but I certainly get the vibe it's going for.
Mm-hmm.
But compare that to like posters, which is just like Empty Man written in weird fonts.
Sure.
Or like it's like I think one has like the skeleton, like a skeleton thing that's you just kind of see, I think, once in the movie. It sets up like just some very generic kind of film, but the film itself is like far more researched in like urban legend lore and again cosmic horror type stuff, and has a variety, especially by once you kind of figure out where it's going, it's like it's got a lot going on that you would not expect. So that's the one that also stuck out to me for the purpose of this podcast.
Interesting.
Very cool.
Because
Just Watch says it is on Hulu.
Good. So people can more people can check out The Empty Man because it's Hulu, because it's Disney at this point. I can't imagine there'll be like some kind of special release of it anytime soon, but it certainly feels like a movie that if it wasn't a part of that studio, it could easily get some big like fancy release, because I'm sure the director has plenty he'd like to say about this thing because it's weird as fuck. So, but yeah, it's a worthwhile thing.
Okay.
All right. Well, gone through our list here. I certainly still have several others I didn't mention. You guys have any others that you want to throw in here quickly?
Hit it.
I had Paranormal Activity 3. The poster features a scene not in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The mirror, right? The girls looking at the mirror.
Yeah. I believe that was it.
The paranormal movies, that's just in general feels like a good topic because those are so much. We filmed a ton of shit, and we even our teaser trailers have like some of that in there.
Yes,
and then the final product's like 80 minutes of whatever made sense in the edit.
It's our thing.
Whatever makes sense in the edit. I'm looking at the poster now.
I had one on my list that I wish went the opposite direction, where they did mislead us a bit more, and that was From Dusk Till Dawn. I wish that the trailers had actually hidden the fact that it was a vampire movie. They totally could have made a trailer just making us think it's about these two criminals and they abduct a family and such, and completely hidden the vampire stuff and made it all a surprise.
The benefit of time is that people don't watch those trailers now. And if there's one thing one joy I get in life, it's watching From Dusk Till Dawn with people for the first time, because it is the best thing you can do to somebody watching a movie. And it helps that it's not like crazy scary. It's just like, this is not the movie it was, a minute ago. It is something different now. It is. Yeah. I've done that. Believe me, I've done that many times with various friends and roommates. I have watched From Dusk Till Dawn, not letting them know what the movie was going to be. And so it's a ride.
I remember it was so crazy. I bought it on VHS back in the day. My specially ordered widescreen VHS from Suncoast. And I sat down to watch it. And like my dad decided to sit down with me and watch it. And then like he lost his fucking mind when it turned to vampires. And I'm like, you didn't know about this is in the 90s when this movie would have been had advertisements. Also, he just totally missed the bus. My friend, he loved it. He was like, oh my gosh, I could like it was just such a wild turn that he wasn't expecting. He thought that was crazy. I didn't. It's like, okay. I mean, that was the sales pitch for it, but okay. That's awesome.
I watched it with my mom. I can't remember if she had seen it in theaters already or if she just rented it because she knew it was a vampire movie. I didn't know.
Okay.
But she like she loves the design. She loved the design of vampire, like, you know, the different kinds of vampires you'd get. So by the time they finally get to Salma Hayek transforming into a vampire, I always remember exactly what she said. She's like, "Oh, it's like an alien vampire because it's such a weird, like, scaly design. Like, it's such
weird
a different
horns back,
exactly, Todd. It's like a snake-like thing. So it's just that was her initial reaction, like, "Oh, it's like an alien vampire." That was her way of going. Meanwhile, I'm being there like, "Oh, so this is what we're doing?"
this is a choice.
I'm sitting here, again, as like a 10-year-old watching this being like, this Quentin Tarantino's scary as an actor in this movie. Like, he's freaking me out. And then it's like, and now we're a vampire. And Tom Savini's got a crotch gun and it's great. Like, it's nonsense.
Sex machine.
That's
yes.
right. Yeah.
And my mom, she definitely pointed out Fred Williams. And he's like, that's Fred Williams.
The hammer.
I got a few here just to check off. The Tremors poster makes the thing look way more vicious than it, like, I mean, it's vicious in the movie, but it's like, it's all teeth. It's like all
it's fun poster.
Oh, and, like, speaking of, go ahead. I have another one.
I was just gonna say the Tremors poster, like, you know, it's the graboid, right? It has all these tentacles that do the job, and then it kind of sucks you in. The poster's like this giant teeth monster, and you're like, that's not exactly.
Yep,
it's like a Jaws riff. That's what the idea of the poster's aiming for, but it's
cruel
still
Jaws.
It's still a Tremors is kind of cruel Jaws. It's mean. It just stays there.
Hair by Kevin Bacon.
Tremors Shrieker Island, which is the one with John Heder. Nothing like that. Happens in the movie. Really?
There's no shrieking in the island. Or
if you look at the poster and like, okay, that's that doesn't, nothing like that happens, not even close.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
and it takes place on a peninsula.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
He doesn't wield a chainsaw.
Yeah, no. Well, I saw it once. I don't remember, but like I remember, that poster is like wildly inaccurate.
Michael Gross still in the?
Oh, he's in all of them.
Oh yeah, you can't.
Can't stop, won't stop.
He's the franchise.
Yeah, he's the face of the franchise.
There's a Corman one called Forbidden World that is nothing like the poster. It's a whole lot of dark room sets and corridors. Yeah. Like, there's no creature is in the movie, but it does not look like that. And there's no woman chained in a cave waiting to be fed it. So that's what I had on here.
Popcorn.
Such a fun poster.
It's a fun poster. I think a big theme of the posters as I was going through this, by the way, skeletons. Skeletons everywhere. Yeah. Skeletons. I mean, it's a big selling point for a lot of these.
They sell a lot of horror movies.
Oh, yeah. Popcorn's a fun poster. Night of the Comet, because if you just say Night of the Comet and you look at that poster and they're like, oh, it must be a comet. Like, you don't expect it to be like, oh, it's like a Valley Girl satire. Like, it's not like that's not what you're necessarily expecting watching that
movie. Valley Girl and zombies. And like,
They're going for an Amblin feel with that.
Poem. Yeah.
You know?
Wait, what was the movie again, Aaron?
Night of the Comet.
Yeah. Night of the Comet, okay.
That's a big favorite between us. Jimmy O is a huge fan of Night of the Comet. The Tommyknockers, because the title is just in big green letters, and I'm always like, what's this movie? Or TV miniseries thing. And it's bad. It's just really bad. That's what it is. That's the answer to that question.
Knocking at your door. There's some VHS covers and DVD covers for Dario Argento's Phantom of the Opera, which include the Phantom of the Opera mask, which does not appear in his iteration of the story. So that's one.
Hellraiser implies that Pinhead's going to be a major character in that first movie, and he's not really there.
Still haven't seen it.
He didn't raise much hell at all.
Hellraiser starring Pinhead.
You would never guess that he's in all of them, I guess, maybe. But one of the more fun things about this exercise as I was going through it was like, I clearly have not seen any of these movies because I've been too scared to watch them as a child, and I still haven't revisited them as an adult. So it was actually really fun to be like, oh yeah, I remember that movie, and I'll never see it even now.
The other Wes Craven movie that we didn't mention is The Serpent and the Rainbow, which I don't think it's too misleading, because I think the tagline, because the poster is like, it's Bill Pullman in a coffin with like makeup on his face because he's like going.
You can
like,
barely tell it's Bill Pullman.
You wouldn't be able to know it's Bill Pullman. But regardless of that, like it's just like there's this guy screaming in a coffin. But the tagline is "Don't bury me, I'm not dead," which is funny. That's a funny tagline. That just makes me smile when I read that.
Note to self:
dumping dirt on me, I'm alive.
And the movie itself, Brandon, I told you that like the movie Servant of Rain, which I really like. It feels like if like Bruce Campbell played it straight in an Evil Dead movie, like it plays like an Evil Dead, except it has far more stakes and serious circumstances going on.
It's like this. There's a running theme with Wes Craven movies where he can make 3/4 of a movie be pretty creepy, intriguing, all this, and then it ends up with some goofy freaking fight thing at the end, like. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, like Last House on the Left, even Nightmare on Elm Street turns into like a Straw Dogsy, people call it now Home Alone type ending with booby traps and things. I love it, but this one ends up being a big showdown goofy thing as well. When it gets down to it, and a lot of his movies wind up in that theme.
Yep.
There you
go. Let's see what else. Saw is a misnomer. It's a big hand on the poster. Nobody's hand gets cut off in Saw.
So lead you astray. The hand is the Janet Leigh of the poster.
There you go. Foot. And we're back.
I think the New Mutants, the famed New Mutants movie, has a cool poster as far as all the kids' heads are going through the wall like it's a Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah. And that was that was the initial sales pitch. It's like, what if a Nightmare on Elm Street, but an X-Men movie? Like, that's a cool idea. And that movie, and that's the thing too. New Mutants is not terrible. It's not good, but it's not like a disaster. It's just pretty bland and doesn't capitalize on what I assume is a different cut of the movie where it is more horror focused and has more of that imagery going on to like evoke
what could have been.
Yeah.
It's so weird because I see promise in it when I'm watching it, but it's not good. It's like, it's a weird feeling watching New Mutants because you're like, this isn't good, but it could be. There's another edit that works somewhere.
There must be, but even then, it's probably not great, which is why they, you know, would edit it to begin with. But like the result wasn't any better. What else? What else out here? Screamers, that Peter Weller movie. Yeah. The trailer for that used to scare me when I was young because I just thought it was about like weird mechanical things that would like shoot out at you in the desert. And I'm like, I don't want any part of that at all. And the movie itself is like, oh, it's just like a dystopian thing. And there's like little machines and they're not that bad if you just avoid them. Like, it's fine. it's all right. Let's see. April Fool's Day, for reasons that we can't really get into, but it's a solid poster that kind of does the movie, but it's like
I like her hair is tied into a noose on the back of that.
Yeah, it's a fun poster for sure.
Love it.
Yeah. And just because I got an F cinema score, It Comes at Night, a movie that I love that I think is fantastic and has a super great poster of this dog just looking in the dark.
Yeah,
it's a great evocative poster, and it set audiences up for something really creepy, and I'd argue it is really creepy, except audiences did not like it. They were bored and they gave it an F, but they're wrong and they're stupid, so they're
that's a good way to pander to the audience.
That's just handful of other ones I was considering while doing my research here. Great.
We did it.
All right. Very cool. This has been fun. Misleading horror. Once again, I did note all of the movies that we mentioned. I'll be sure to have that in the show notes for anybody to pick up on in case they want
to
check
out. I can't wait to go watch the Shish Kebab movie that Brandon was talking about and find out that none of these people are the ones that get killed in that order.
Yeah, that'll be a way to go. I keep forgetting to mention this. We should have a contest, which I also didn't think of what it should actually be, mainly because I have a fresh, brand new copy of Late Night with the Devil that I want to give away.
Hey.
We should really come up with what that contest should be. So I'm just going to say right now, tune in next week when we come up with what that contest is, and you'll be able to possibly win a fresh new copy of Late Night with the Devil on Blu-ray. So yeah, with all that in mind, though, let's wrap up here. Todd, leaving now, where can people find more of you online?
Well, my podcast is The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that all the places that you find your podcasts. My blog is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And I'm on X at Forgotten Films. It's films with a Z.
Great. Brandon Peters.
All right. Since I'm on here every week for these horror things and I plug myself, you'll hear it next week. Since we were doing a kind of a video store thing this week, I wanted to plug Scarecrow Video in Seattle, Washington, one of the last remaining historic video stores. And they are having an SOS, which is Save Our Scarecrow thing, going on this year, where they, in order to continue to operate, they need $1.8 million. And they've been doing fundraisers, things like that to it. It's a great place. I've been there twice. Really fun, good people. It's amazing just to be in, and they had a thing back in like 2014, like 10 years ago, where they were able to take control of it. I think they kind of made it a historical monument, but operating costs and things have changed in that time and they need more money. And I think they've only raised about a quarter of their goal so far. But if you can go to look up Scarecrow Video, just Google it or something like that and go there. And if you want to help donate, it's a worthy cause. And it's a place that I hope is still standing because it is impressive. And I'd hate to wonder what would happen to their inventory if they went under. So great place. Look it up. Just go visit it if you're ever in Seattle or nearby or you live in Seattle. I know people in Seattle hadn't even heard of it before. But it's a very good thing, and that's a good cause, and you should help out Scarecrow Video.
I will put that in the show notes as well. Thanks for that, Brandon.
Checking them out right now. They've got some cool stuff going on their website.
Yep. Awesome place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could, everything I do, you can find in various places. Although I say this all the time. We're on all the socials and everything. You can find this podcast everywhere you can buy podcasts. And next week, for our next horror special, it's this year is the 10th anniversary of The Babadook, and we'll be discussing that film as a part of our Monsterpalooza collaboration with Professor Mike Dillon, and Brandon's going to join us back for that one as well. So, yeah, that's going to do it. Todd, Brandon, thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is a lot of fun. Thanks to listeners for listening. Stay tuned for next week. We'll all wear our hats and coats, of course. But yeah, that's going to do it for now. So until next time, so long
and goodbye.
Farewell. All my life I've been looking for the-